Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's Barbecue Nation with JT on a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now here's JT.
Hey everybody, I'd like to welcome you back to Barbecue Nation, the show where we talk barbecue. I'm JT along with my producer Dave. Here high atop the radio world here in Portland, we have the 4th of July coming up in a few days. So I invited our good friend Meathead. Sorry, I didn't even say it right. You got me so psyched up about what we were talking about before. Goldwyn from AmazingRibs.com, and he's going to join us for another toasty, roasty hour here on Barbecue Nation. Our music today is going to be, just various artists. I thought I'd throw a little patriotic music at you during the breaks here. So welcome. My friend Meathead, how are you?
I'm good. At least you didn't call me Meatball or Meatloaf or something. Although, once when we talked, you did play Meatloaf music in the background. I remember that. That was funny.
Yeah, I did. I confess, I did that.
I'm good, JT. How are you? Let's talk some barbecue. It is the national barbecue holiday coming up, 4th of July. You can say all you want about the patriotism and everything, but it's a good time to eat ribs.
It is. I looked up a couple of stats before we came on the air today, and there's 150 million hot dogs sold. These are just rounded numbers, of course. 700 million pounds of chicken, but 190 million pounds of pork and beef, and a lot of those are ribs. And for the average person cooking ribs on the 4th of July, give us a little starting point to work with here. What should they be doing?
And I think, for I've got a campaign on that, Thanksgiving is turkey, 4th of July should be ribs.
Yep.
Although a lot of us, I'll be cooking hot dogs and hamburgers for my party, too.
Oh, sure.
Ribs are from the rib cage, of course, and they're a very, very tough muscle. It works very, very hard. Each of those little muscle fibers and then the bundles of muscles are surrounded by an elastic tissue that is very, very tough, and if you try to cook it too fast or too hot, it gets even tougher. It shrinks and it squeezes out moisture. So to get ribs really tender, really juicy, really delicious, you want to cook them low and slow, around 225. Don't put it right over direct heat. Put it over indirect heat. Divide your grill in a hot zone and a non-hot zone. Got a gas grill, a couple of burners on, a couple of burners off. Put it over the off side, charcoal grill, push the charcoal all to one side, and just let it gently roast there. Throw some wood on the charcoal or on the gas burners so you get some wood smoky flavor in there. And it can take 3 to 4 hours for baby backs and 5 to 6 hours for side ribs or St. Louis cut or spare ribs or center cut. They have different names for the cuts. But it takes that long to get them really tender and juicy.
Is that one of the biggest mistakes that people make, is because they're doing ribs and they think they can do them? And, if they cook them too hot, they get kind of brown and nice looking on the outside. But you open them up and they're not pink. They're still raw.
Yeah, they can still be raw, but they're just really tough. I mean,
yeah.
People think that they fire up the grill. First of all, a lot of folks haven't learned about two-zone cooking, and that is a hot side and not hot side.
Right.
We cook too hot, especially us guys. Pedal to the metal, get it hotter. Turn down the heat. Gentle heat, softer heat, keeps moisture in the food. All foods, whether you're cooking baked potatoes or chicken or whatever, turn down the heat. And most folks, they'll just fire up the grill, throw the charcoals all across the bottom, and then they throw those rib slabs on there and flip, 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 flip. And before the outside is charred to a crisp, they pull them off and they think they're done. And they're just going to be really chewy, really stringy, really tough, still pink in the center. They're just not very good. And they wonder how the great barbecue restaurants do it. And I'm telling you, the way they do it is low and slow. 3 to 5 hours for, or 3 to 6 hours, depending on the cut.
Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about the cuts. There's a number of different ones. You've got, you know, back ribs, spare ribs, side ribs, baby back, like you said, Kansas City tips, country style, rib ends.
It's confusing.
Yeah. And so when you say, hey, we're doing ribs, I think most people have a picture in their mind of just this big slab of ribs. But that's not always what you're going to get.
Yeah. If you visualize the rib cage, like your rib cage,
mm-hmm.
everybody visualize TJ's rib cage. Okay? You got that picture out there, folks? It starts at the spine, and it wraps around almost to the breastbone, to the chest. And there's different portions of it. The very back part where the spine is, the ribs curve in order to get around to the side, and they look like hockey sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And those are your back ribs. Those are your baby back ribs, and they're called loin back ribs or baby back ribs. They got different names depending on your grocer and your butcher. But you can always tell because they've got this hockey stick curve. And the meat is on top of the bones because that's the loin meat. That's where your pork chops come from, the loin muscle, which lays on top of the baby back ribs. So the meat is very tender, very lean on top. As you move down the side, you can take that section that starts on the side and wraps all the way around to the front. And those are called spare ribs. And I don't know why they're called spares, because they're not leftover or anything like
yeah.
that. But they also have multiple sections. A lot of butchers will cut off the chest portion, the breasts portion, which has got a lot of cartilage in it, and it's got a lot of connective tissue, and those are called the rib tips. And a lot of people really like them. A lot of people think they're junky. They're fun. There's a lot of flavor in them, but they're just very weird texture if you're not used to them. But the rib section that's in between the tips and the baby backs, they sometimes call St. Louis cut or center cut.
Mm-hmm.
And those center cut ribs, the meat is mostly in between the bones, and it's got that tough connective tissue. That's why it takes so long, 5 to 6 hours. But if you gently bathe them in low temperature heat, maybe a little smoke, they'll come really tender. They'll be as tender as a filet mignon steak. They won't fall off the bone. If the meat falls off the bone, chances are it's been steamed or boiled. And if you boil ribs, you suck the flavor out. If you look at the water that's left over after you boil them, it's brown. That's all the flavor. Water's a solvent, so you don't want to boil them. You just want to warm air roast them gently. Keeps all the flavor in. They don't fall off the bone, but they come gently off the bone in your teeth with the tenderness of a nice, gentle steak.
We like that part.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I've never understood is people make a big deal about, I ate these ribs the other day and they just fell off the bone. And to me, it's always like, well, if you wanted to eat something that didn't have the bone attached to it, you know, eat a pork steak or something. I mean,
food.
Yeah. I've never got that. I'm sorry. I've been around this stuff a long time, but I just have never understood that.
Well, you know, what I think happened is ribs, like I've just described, came up from the southern states. The method of cooking was perfected by African-American slaves because master took the loin meat that was on top of the baby backs, and that was the tender, juicy pork chop meat, and that was eating high off the hog. And he gave the slaves the tougher cuts, the shoulder and the ribs, and they finally figured out this low and slow roasting technique. Well, we got all this influx of Europeans come into the country towards the late 1800s, and they came to this country, and they tasted American ribs, and they said, hey, these are good. We can do that. Let's do it the way we do it back home. Well, back home, in Poland, in Czechoslovakia, in Russia, the way they cook pork ribs is they simmer them in water with cabbage and potatoes and caraway seed, and they make a stew. and it gets really tender, and all that flavor comes out of the meat into the liquid, and that's their typical style. So they brought that technique to the United States. They'd simmer them in water, then pull them out, slather them with American barbecue sauce, throw them on a grill to get them crispy, and that was what they thought was American ribs. And those ribs were really tender, really soft, fell off the bone because they've been boiled, but the meat has lost all its flavor. But most people didn't care because what they really liked is the sauce.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why McDonald's McRib is so popular.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just ground up pork. It's a pork burger, but it's the sauce. They make a pretty good sauce, and people love the barbecue sauce.
Yep. Hey, we're going to take a break here on Barbecue Nation. We're going to be back with our friend Meathead Goldwyn. After this break, we're going to be talking ribs all day here on The Nation. Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, and you're listening to us on the Radio Northwest Network. If you'd like to email us, you can do it at Barbecue Nation. That's BBQNation@KXL.com. If you want to send us a recipe, you might win a prize. Same thing, recipes@KXL.com. You can find us on Facebook, Barbecue Nation with JT, whatever. Whatever my name is today, it's that. We're talking with
your name.
Yeah, I don't. Some days I'm just not sure anymore. We're talking with Meathead Goldwyn from AmazingRibs.com, the most informative website about barbecue you will ever see. And I say that because I look at dozens of them all the time. And most of them are really good. But yours is science-based, and I like that. So, anyway.
Thank you.
Yeah. A couple of stats for people I just thought that they might enjoy. 80% of all people will attend. These are people in the United States. Will attend a barbecue or a cookout over the 4th. 63% will attend a fireworks display or watch it from their home. And there will be over 70 million cases of beer sold. I think that's the important part.
I'm in for about 20 of those.
There you go. There you go. I can dig that. So let's talk about this. Let's just, again, assume we've got somebody who really wants to put on a good rib show, if you will, for the 4th. They've done them a couple times. They've finally learned that they don't boil them or bake them first or anything like that. But let's talk about a couple of things, more specific about cooking time, how they can test them, like the bend test, and more importantly, starting like with the trimming. How would they trim them if they needed trimming?
If I can backtrack first,
sure.
It just dawned on me. We left out one cut of ribs that's important to talk about, and that is people often buy what they call country ribs. And it's important to tell folks that those are really not ribs. There may be a rib bone in there, but they're cut primarily from the shoulder where the rib section meets the shoulder, and they're really more like pork chops. And you don't want to cook those for 4 or 5 hours. Those are like pork chops. You want to grill those, and don't cook them past 140, 145 degrees at the most. Those you want to cook gently, but you don't want to cook them long. You want those cooked to medium, not like the ribs, which are going to be cooked way high temperature, really tender and juicy. Pork chops, much lower finish temperature in the 140 to 145 range.
Mm-hmm.
Now, ribs, you're going to cook all the way up to 190 or 200, because it takes that much to melt those connective tissues and make them tender and juicy.
Sure.
And it's kind of hard to use a digital thermometer to tell when they're done. Digital thermometer, as you and I have discussed in the past, the single most important tool an outdoor cook can have, a good one that reads accurately in 5 seconds or less. You can get them for under $30, and nothing will improve your outdoor cooking skill better than a good digital thermometer, because you won't ever overcook or worse still, undercook and get somebody sick.
Sure.
But for ribs, it's really hard to tell because the meat is such a thin sliver in between the bones, and the bones are often a different temperature than the meat. So a really good technique is you pick them up by the end with your tongs and kind of bounce them. And when they're done, they'll crack. You'll see the split in the surface, and you'll see the pink meat underneath start to show. Another technique is to kind of grab the end of a bone and twist it And if it's really loose in there, they're done. A lot of people talk about when they pull back from the bone and shrink. But if you're getting shrinkage, that's bad. You don't. That means you're cooking too hot. The protein is shrinking and squeezing out juice. So the really good ribs, and if you look at ever look at competition ribs, you barely see bones sticking out of the end because they're cooked at low temperatures and there's very little shrinkage.
That is true. But I think, like you said, that goes back to old wives' tales, if you are, and some things that back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, we didn't know that much, about the science of this type of barbecuing. I mean, we were cooking them and we were burning the hell out of chicken and stuff, but it was still not done properly inside, or we overcooked it and then it did fall off the bone. And you were really using buckets of sauce at that point,
well,
I think.
Well, you know, you're talking about Yankees and white folks. Southern blacks knew how to do this. This was part of their tradition. This is Southern cuisine. And they've mastered this for years, and it's been part of their heritage and tradition for years. And African Americans, you won't find them boiling their ribs very often.
No.
But you're right. One of the things, I mean, this was learned by experimentation out back of the big house where the kitchen was. But one of the things that's happened in recent years, it's kind of fun, is there's this new genre of cooks, and I'm among them, that are nerds. We're nerd cooks. Kenji Lopez-Alt at Serious Eats, Christopher Kimball at Milk Street, our godfather, Harold McGee, the food scientist. What's happening is we do have these digital thermometers. We have these digital scales. We have people doing lab research, and we're learning that these old husband's tales, if you will, these old wives' tales, these techniques that even the great French and Chinese cooks have passed down from generation to generation, a lot of them don't hold up, and we've learned that there are things one can do applying what we've learned using food science to make food better. And I recently published a book called The Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling, and half of the book is all about the science of heat, the science of smoke, the science of meat, and we get into this sort of thing. And if you're a bit of a nerd, and a lot of us are in this technological society, this is fun stuff.
It is fun stuff, and I was going to talk about the book a little bit in the next segment because it is a very helpful book for people, even people that have had a lot of experience and do have a good skill level. Your book is very helpful to that, and it's also very helpful, exceedingly helpful, I will say, to people that are just kind of getting started in this. We're going to take a break here. We're going to be back with Meathead Goldwyn in just a minute. I want to say hi to a couple of affiliates very quickly, KFLS in Klamath Falls and KLBM in La Grande, Oregon. Thanks for listening over there on the Radio Northwest Network. We're going to leave you with a little inspirational, patriotic music, and then we're going to come back with Meathead right after this. Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT. Dr. Dave's floating around here somewhere. We've got Meathead Goldwyn with us. As we talked about, Meathead mentioned just before we took to the break here, he does have a book. It's called The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling. And it's, I recommend it for you. I interview a lot of authors. They've all got good ideas. They've all got, you know, their little things that they found. But if you want one barbecue book to put on your shelf, it's this one. That's what I'm going to tell you. So there you go.
Wow.
How's that for an endorsement?
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's talk about one of the things you actually cover in your book, which I always find fascinating, even when I reread them, is the myth that you put to rest there. And I'm going to read a couple of them, and then we'll tackle them here. Osmosis is how salt gets into the meat. Fat cap will melt and make your meat juicier. Oil the grill to prevent meat from sticking. Pink pork puts you at risk. There's just such a lot of them, and you've spent an inordinate amount of time and research putting those things to rest. But what I find is people still haven't caught on to some of those.
Those who hang out on our website or read my book get it. And we have a pretty good following of acolytes, and they understand it. But these old myths don't die hard. The New York Times just ran a hot dog tasting this week, and I was reading the reader comments, and it's just amazing how totally clueless people are about food in this country, not just barbecue and hot dogs, but about food in general. There's been so much written, and yet we still know so little. We worry so much about food. I try to tell people, you know, you're going to, if you eat about 1,000 meals a year, uh-huh. If you live to 80, you're going to eat 80,000 meals in your lifetime. You can have a hot dog every now and then. You can have pepperoni every now and then. You can eat Cheetos every now and then. It's not going to kill you. You don't have to worry about getting organic food every day. You know, anxiety over what we eat is going to kill you faster than anything you eat. So when it comes to, I'm rambling now, but you got me going on a topic about which I get agitated. But there's a lot of mythology around cooking as well. We talked about one of the things you mentioned that we talk about in the book about pink pork. I think people, some of us are catching on to that. The USDA lowered the temperature, recommended safe temperature for pork down to, I think they say, 145 now. And if you get it down to 135 to 140, you're in the medium range, like a mm-hmm. medium steak. It's pink in the center, and it can be really tender and juicy. And it's no riskier than eating a steak at 135 to 140. In fact, most steakhouses serve steak medium rare, and medium rare is in the 130 range.
Right.
And so you can eat pork down in that. It's just as safe. USDA is erring on the side of conservatism and safety, but on whole muscle meats. Now, ground meats are very different. You do not want to veer from USDA recommendations on ground meats. And poultry, you don't want to veer from their recommendations because both of them are higher risk. But a whole muscle meat, like a steak or a pork chop, you can eat them down in the 140-degree range, and you can feel pretty darn safe. The risk is really, really, really low. There is no more trichinosis in pork in this country. That's one of the benefits of the way we raise animals. Now, a lot of people get very agitated about the way animals are raised in this country, with good reason. There's a lot that can be done to improve the handling of these animals. But one of the things that has happened, one of the benefits is that trichinosis is a thing of the past. It's not an issue. There hasn't been a case of trichinosis in pork in decades. The last case we had in this country was from a wild bear. You don't want to eat rare wild bear. So,
yeah.
and I got to tell you, a lot of restaurants will serve pink pork. It is tender and juicy and spectacular, and you're not going to get sick.
I've gotten in many a discussion with friends of mine who are like, oh, man, I made this marinade and I put a little Jack Daniels in it and I did this or I did that, you know, and I left it in there overnight and, oh, God, it was so good. Like you say, a 16th of an inch down, you can taste it. Other than that, when you get into the center of the meat or the center of the steak or the chop mm-hmm. or whatever you're doing, you're just tasting steak or pork chop or whatever right. you happen to be eating.
But if you've got a 1-inch thick steak and it does penetrate a 16th inch on each side, now it's got an 1/8 inch out of a 1-inch steak. So you're 1/8 of the way penetrated. You cut a slice of it off and you get those flavors in your mouth.
Right, right.
You can taste them, but they're not getting down into the center and they're not tenderizing.
No.
They're not altering the structure of the proteins of the meat. They're not affecting them at all. So it's just, you know, but salt is magical. Salt gets down to the center, and salt amplifies flavor. And people are all nervous about how much salt they use. You don't need a lot. A half a teaspoon of kosher salt per pound of meat, or if you're using table salt, a quarter of a teaspoon.
Sure.
Is enough, and if you put it on overnight, it will melt and get down in, and it will amp up the flavor. And not only that, it alters the structure of the protein and helps the protein hold on to moisture. And that's important. So salt is the magic rock.
I always, there's got to be some correlation here. We need salt in our body. I mean,
yes.
we need salt in our body. And then they said, don't eat too much salt. Don't do this. Don't do that. Of course, we have a society that's a lot full of a lot of don't do's and not a society that's got a lot of, yeah, you can do this deal. And so I've always wondered about that. You know, we need salt. We do that. You're right. I mean, if you even look at early, you know, I don't know, back in the paleo era or the Pleistocene era or something like that. But, you know, in the last few hundred years, we've learned that, you know, salt on meats, you know, people coming across the prairie when they were pioneering and stuff, they salted their meats. The Indians did it. You know, people have learned to use salt in a good way like that. And now all of a sudden it's, you know, 2017, and the last 10, 15 years, it's don't use too much salt. So I don't know.
The doctors, we call salt an essential element or essential mineral because we need it in our bodies. Our electrical system, think of your home. Your home has an electrical system. You have an electrical system. It's your nervous system. And your nervous system cannot function without salt, but your body does not manufacture salt.
Right.
Your body can manufacture fat. It can manufacture most of the other elements that you need, but you have to ingest salt to get it, and you cannot function. Your electrical system fails without salt. So you need salt. The question that's been on everybody's mind is how much? And one of the things that we're learning is that it really varies from person to person. I mean, we're learning this about a lot of stuff that we're eating. And just in the past year or two, there's been some really interesting research that, I mean, for years we were saying salt, sugar, fat, those are the three stooges, the evils. And now a lot of people are looking very carefully at them, and it seems like salt and fat, maybe not as evil as we thought, and we're finding out, of course, we knew salt was essential, that a lot of these fats that we thought were dangerous may not be so dangerous. It's a moving target. I'm old enough to remember when everybody was told to eat margarine, stay away from butter. Now it's just the opposite. Stay away from trans fats like margarine. Eat butter is good. So it's a moving target because, they can't do a lab experiment. They can't take 100 people and lock them in a room and give them a high-salt or a high-fat diet and then take another people, lock them in another room, give them a low-salt, low-fat diet, and then see who lives the longest after 30 years. It's very hard to do that. The way they do that is by asking people what they eat, what their diets are like, and that's a very inaccurate, imprecise measurement because correlation is not causation. And this is a really important concept when people read about nutrition and health. You know, there's really good research that teaches us that the more TV you watch, the more likely you're to be overweight. So it's really easy, I think, to deduce that there's radiation coming from our TV that causes us to be fat, right? Isn't that a correlation?
I think that's a good
conclusion. Well, of course, we know that's nonsense.
Yeah, we got to take a break. I'm up against a hard break, Meathead, but we're going to come back in just a minute. Meathead Goldwyn is here with us on Barbecue Nation, whatever the name of this show is. But we're coming back in a minute. Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. We've got our old buddy Meathead Goldwyn with us, purveyor of AmazingRibs.com website and the author of the great book, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling. We've just got a few minutes left here before we wrap up. But meathead, there's one thing that there's been a trend. It's a trend that honestly I don't like, and it's you addressed it in your book, and it says caveman steaks are the best. Now, I spent a lot of time as a kid out in the woods and in the desert. I'll tell you what, I never found it really enjoyable to put a good piece of meat, didn't matter what it was, beef, pork, whatever, on the coals. I didn't like that. And no, that's just me, but nobody's ever going to convince me that that's a good way to cook it. So,
you know, it's gotten, it's a parlor trick, and it's something that has caught people's attention, because you can cook a steak by getting your coals really hot, blowing some of the ashes off, and throwing the meat right on the coals.
Right.
And sure enough, it will cook. Surprise, surprise, the coals are hot. It's not a great way to cook a steak. You will get some ash stuck to the surface, and it's not tasty.
No.
You will get burn marks in some sections where the coals are actually touching. You'll get sections where it isn't cooked properly. A far better technique is to get those coals good and hot and put a wire rack right above them, as close mm-hmm. to them as you can get. Now you're going to get radiant heat, not conduction heat. Different kinds of heat. Conduction heat is different than radiant heat. And if you put that rack just above it, you'll get radiant heat, and it's much more even. And you're going to get a beautiful all-over brown on the surface, and you're not going to burn it. You're not going to get any ashes on it. You can flip it often, and that's another topic we can talk about another time, and you'll get a much better cooked steak. So, it's a bit of a parlor trick, and it's cute, and it's fun, but it's not the best way to cook steak by a long shot. It's a first cousin to beer can chicken, which is another one we could talk about sometime.
Right.
Not the best way to cook a chicken either.
No, and having spent time, like I said, out there, you can get flavors like coffee grounds, burnt banana peels,
mm-hmm.
Everything else that people have just chucked into the fire. You want a vast array of seasoning? Do it that way. Okay, really quickly, we've got about 2.5 minutes left here. Give us a rundown again really quick about ribs, 4th of July. Give us the five things that we've talked about that people should really pay attention to. First of all, have your barbecue, your grill or whatever you're using so it works. I'll throw that one in.
You want to clean the surface, the cooking surface. The grease on the top and underneath the wire rack is going to smoke, and that smoke doesn't taste good. Wood smoke tastes much better than grease smoke, so clean your cooking surfaces well. Number two, take your time with the ribs. Cook them over indirect heat. Push all the coals to one side or just use the burners on one side and put the meat on the indirect or the convection airflow side and roast them gently. Throw some wood chunks or chips on top of the direct heat so that they burn and create smoke, and that adds flavor. And try to keep the temperature down. Around 225 is a good number. Don't cook really hot. Take your time. Take your pedal off the metal. Relax. Take 3 to 4 hours for baby backs, 5 to 6 hours for St. Louis cut or spare ribs. And that will make them really tender and juicy. And then don't put the sauce on until you're almost done, 15, 20 minutes from done. Otherwise, the sauce can burn.
Yep.
And it's really easy, and you'll get really great Southern-style, restaurant-style ribs.
And you're going to be lip-smacking when that baby's done.
You betcha.
I love that. What 30 seconds here. What have you got planned in the future for Amazing Ribs?
We've been doing a lot of fun with sous vide Q, we call it, where sous vide is a cooking technique, and we don't have time to describe it, but you put something in a plastic bag and submerge it in water, and it cooks very, very gently. Then you take it out and grill the snot out of it to get the surface right, and that's a lot of fun, and you can get really good flavors and incredible tenderness.
Well, if they want to find out about that, they can go to AmazingRibs.com. That would be great. Meathead Goldwyn, thank you so much. Not just my friend, but a friend of the show and a friend of our listeners. As always, it's really fun to talk to you.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on again. It's always a pleasure to talk to somebody who knows their food like you do.
Well, if you saw me, you would know I know.
We're going to have to get together.
We will have to get together. That's going to wrap it up for us this week here on Barbecue Nation. Don't forget our little motto here, turn it, don't burn it. And you can check out more of my stuff on thecowboycook.com. So until next time, Dr. Dave and myself will be joining you. And we wish you all a very happy 4th of July. Take care, everybody.